This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high above the Milkpacking District, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, yes, now, as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
The miners are finally being rescued from their underground captured place. I didn't really plan that one very well.
Pit of despair.
Pit of despair.
There you go.
A man drives onto the Max tracks and holds up traffic. And a mosque is vandalized with bacon.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. That is all ye know, and all ye need know. For this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, October 13th, 2010. A man from Medford was arrested early Wednesday for allegedly driving drunk onto the Max tracks in northeast Portland and causing a major traffic and public transportation backup during the morning commute. Police said Sean Fitzgerald Hale, 25, drove his Toyota Camry onto the Max tracks near I-84 westbound and Northeast 28th Avenue around 3:30 a.m. One 911 caller even told dispatchers he thought the man was throwing rocks onto cars that were traveling along the freeway. Officers arrived in the area and found the 25-year-old male in the vehicle, learned that the rocks had been tossed onto the freeway were actually ones kicked up by his vehicle as his tires spun to move his car along the Max tracks.
So I'm so confused about this. So was he trying to get across the tracks and his car got stuck, or was it like a goof where he thought, I'm going to drive parallel with the train tracks, or was it that did he take like a blind turn? Do they not have one-way streets in Medford, or perhaps roads?
Well, I don't know. They did say again he was drunk. Here's his picture. His mugshot.
Is it? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, I was going to ask if this is just what passes for fun in Medford, but I think the answer is a resounding yes, based on this mugshot. Here's the thing about this mugshot is he looks like the sort of combination of many people I know, but none of whom I can quite identify.
No, he's kind of got this David Arquette meets there's some other comedian that he looks kind of like.
But then he also looks like Tom Hulce in Parenthood. As
yeah.
well.
And he's got big puffy
stoner eyes, are called.
Well, yeah, I was going to say Kenny Powers hair.
Totally. All right.
And he doesn't. And again, this is yet another mugshot. We got a lot of mugshots lately from people who do not look the least bit chastened.
You know what he looks? He looks ever so slightly befuddled, but it's sort of with a chaser of amusement at his own sort of rapscallion nature. He has the look. I think we've come to know this as the "Ain't I a stinker?"
Yes, look. Exactly.
There you go. All right, fantastic. Well, hail to you, Sean Fitzgerald of
Medford.
By the way, and this is the Dateline here. I don't know the originating news source for this. It's probably best that we don't know because they spell Portland with the less common P O R T
P-H-A-L-N-D. That is Portland, Oregon.
Portland.
There you go, right here in Portland.
Well, it was breaking news. They were typing very fast to get that out onto the...
Those words are tricky. They get away from you sometimes. You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. You can also get this program on your mobile device as well, if that's your pleasure. It's mobile.cascadia.fm, also available via iTunes later on the day, or as a direct download here, or at legionofnews.com. This is Dawn Taylor.
Their return heralded by a siren's blare and the relieved cries of a jubilant nation, the first of 33 miners began emerging into the cool desert night early Wednesday after 68 harrowing days underground in their pit of despair. Mario Sepulveda was the second miner freed, and he fired up the crowd afterwards.
Did you see this? Did you see the guy doing the whole cheer for the crowd?
I heard it on the radio. What I saw this morning was I saw some guy being released and hugging and kissing his wife, and it made me a little bit misty.
Oh, it was awesome. I'm unashamed. I sat and I watched it for like 90 minutes. I just sat there on the sofa like a boob, watching people who are not me in a country where I don't live, in a language I don't speak, experiencing something that has never happened to me, then knowing a relief that I will never taste. And then I said, we are all brothers today. It was freaking awesome, though, when they brought the guy up out of the capsule and they opened it, and he's like, you know, huzzah, I live again. It was really like a great, like, go science moment. One can argue that science sort of came up with the idea of digging a big hole in the ground and sticking guys in it in the first place, but that was old science. This was modern capsule science. All right, so this is the second guy released, though, because he's the one who immediately just... It's like he did everything but just bust into like a Bjork video number with twirling umbrellas. It was fantastic. This is Chile 1.
Yes.
I'm not even sure what they're saying.
Well, they're saying chi 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 le 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 because they're in Chile.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Hold on.
Yeah, but what's he saying there? What is he saying at the beginning? What do they speak in Chile?
He's saying, "Thank God I don't have to poop in a bucket anymore." I think is what he's saying.
That's one of those things that we should just say that that's what it is. We should just try to start that story right now. No more whizzing on my friends. Do they speak? I mean, it sounds dumb, but is it some variation on? Like Spanish or Chilean or Portuguese or I have no idea what the language is.
I cannot answer that with any authority.
Because I want to know what he's saying here at the. He sounds very enthused about it though. Can I just tell you that as awesome as that is, and it really is quite something. I mean, it's one of those things that it would be easy to be sort of reflexively, I don't know, just cynical about it or whatever. But it was a pretty great moment. Yet at the same time. You just realize, if you're me, that you will just never be as masculine as that guy. I mean, he's been a hole in the ground for like how long? How many days?
33 days, I think it was.
Yeah, over. I mean,
68.
Yeah, it's almost 2.5 months. The guy's been in a pit underground at every at any moment, feeling the rest of the mine might cave in, Timothy style. They had like no food for the first 2 weeks, basically.
Stuck in a dark, dusty room with several guys that he works with every day who he probably can't stand.
Well, and you've got to figure that just in any group of people, if you just think about the average office where you've worked, how many of those people that you just flat out loathe? Probably half of them. Even to give them the benefit of the doubt, you got to figure 10% of the guys in any company, even if you're bonded together by a shared experience. You're working with a guy who's a dick. I mean, the math is just... the math doesn't lie.
Yeah, there's people there you don't even want to bother to talk to at the company picnic.
I will be
stuck in a hole with them for 2 months.
You know, so he's just living through the worst thing imaginable. And he gets out, and not only... seems relatively healthy, seems intact, doesn't seem like he's, the worst for wear in any real sense. But he actually then leaps out and does this sort of Busby Berkeley thing where he, meets like European rally where he leads his countrymen in this like very ferocious, like Manchester United cheer or something. And I was just sitting on the couch eating Cheetos and just thinking to myself, that's awesome. Yeah, I suck. I've wasted my life. So anyway, well, it was fantastic though.
Well, we will revisit that again in the next show.
Awesome.
A South Carolina Musk has been vandalized for the second time this year after somebody spelled out the phrase "pig chump" in bacon slices on a walkway at the Florence Islamic Center on Sunday.
You're wasting bacon, friend. Who do you think is the real pig chump, huh? That's bacon that I could have eaten.
Police say the incident took place between morning and noon prayer sessions and was a deliberate attempt to target the site, which is unmarked and under construction.
We're going to target them with our stupidity. What does pig jump even mean?
Well, maybe they just couldn't spell out some of the other words they wanted to in bacon, because you got to have a lot of straight lines if you're spelling something with bacon. The C would have been the most difficult thing, I think.
Hold on. C-H-U-M. Well, I mean, I guess it's all really. You know, the G's no picnic, though.
No.
That's not a walk in the park.
There's absolutely nothing that identifies it as a mosque, Police Major Carlos Raines told the Associated Press. Members had little doubt that the defacement was a hate crime, but said they plan to continue worshiping at the mosque anyway. Muslims don't eat the pork, so you just think that somebody did this purposefully to make people feel angry, said Mushtaq Hussain, a Muslim resident of Florence, South Carolina. Definitely, they are trying to offend people.
By the way, people are angry. Rick Emerson is angry by the wasting of nature's meat-like candy bar. I will not abide such behavior by my countrymen. Shame. Shame on you, sir.
Wasting bacon.
Seriously, here's the thing. That is the real offense under the Lord, is taking one of his tastiest animals and then just using it in vain.
No. This is why they hate us, by the way.
It really is.
I mean, granted, they have a lot of bacon in South Carolina. I think, you know, that's one of those places where they have... Don't they do a lot of barbecue there?
You know, can I just tell you that somebody ought to make, if this hasn't been created already, they do have a lot of barbecue there. And as you said that, I was just thinking about, you know, how we're in sort of a bacon renaissance right now. In fact, one suspects that in any moment we're going to have some sort of a movie about a zombie made of bacon who attacks pirates. You know, and then it'll just be the confluence of all good things. Yeah, but if this has not already been created, first of all, it hasn't already been created. That's an idea created by Ritko right here. That is by your humble narrator, Rick Emerson. Somebody ought to do an American flag where the red stripes are bacon. You know, it's a brilliant idea.
It is, although I can't imagine no one has done that.
You know, you'd think so, but it's like so many times I come up with things. Pistol whip, hasn't been done. You know, and here, can I just say this?
Whipped cream in a container that looks like a gun.
And let me
pistol
just,
whip. Awesome.
Let me just say this about pistol whip, which is a great idea, by the way, because it's everything that Americans like. It's fat, it's guns, it's a wasteful product, it's fundamentally pointless and useless, it's unnecessary.
It's something that children shouldn't play with, which makes it extra good.
And it's a thing that will undoubtedly lead to lawsuits in the future. It is the quintessential American product. It is a plastic replica of a gun with little canisters you put in the butt of the gun. And then you can shoot whipped cream onto a dessert. It is pistol whip. And here's the thing. I was here in the studio when I came up with it. And you were here in the studio when I came up with it. You thought it was a great idea. And then later when Anna Griffin from the Oregonian was in the studio, you fronted like you thought it was a bad idea.
I did not.
Don't think I wasn't unaware of that. Rick Emerson sees all, Don Taylor.
I never said that it was a bad idea. I expressed some reservations as to the wisdom of actually trying to produce it, because then you would be the target of all those lawsuits.
Oh.
It is something that I believe you should sell that idea to someone else.
Lawsuits.
Let them manufacture it.
I got three.
And then they have to deal with the fallout.
I got three little syllables for you. LLC. Here is Don Taylor.
Despite rumors that TriMet drivers frustrated with difficult contract negotiations were planning to cause a service slowdown today, the morning has gone along as usual. As first reported in the Oregonian, bus drivers had been considering calling in sick, which could potentially impact thousands of people who use public transportation in Portland. However, both TriMet and the drivers' union, Amalgamated Transit Union 757, had warned that a sick out would not only be unprofessional, but illegal. Drivers may still choose to stage a sick out, but even without the backing of the union, because drivers have been very frustrated that they continue to operate without a contract, and efforts to negotiate with TriMet have been growing increasingly tense.
Well, look, here's the thing. I don't even know where I stand on this. I will say this: we got lots of listeners who are TriMet drivers, people who are, you know, as we always say, if you spend your day, if you work behind a wheel of some sort of automobile, if you're driving a vehicle for a living, you are probably a listener to talk radio. It's not that I'm not with my TriMet brethren. I am, but just, you know, like on a very like pedantic level here, if you're going to stage a sick out, maybe you don't want to put out a press release about it saying, hey, we're all going to pretend to be sick tomorrow. Perhaps leaving like a legal printed record of the fact that you are engaging in fraudulent behavior isn't the most shrewd or effective way to increase your bargaining power. I mean, I'm just saying. I don't mean to be like Johnny Prosaic about it or anything, but...
Unless, of course, they were just threatening it merely to make the point that, you know, if we did do that, you would be screwed.
Well, you know...
So, therefore, perhaps you should talk to us about maybe not making us pay part of our health insurance.
I guess. I'm just saying that, you know, here's the thing. Like, in a post-Reagan era, you threaten the company with a sick-out, the company just threatens you with being homeless because you have no job.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it just doesn't work. I mean, you're old enough, Don, even at the age of 22, to remember when Reagan fired all the air traffic controllers.
Well, I remember when Taft got into it with the beer wagon operators. And that wasn't pretty when he called out the Pinkertons.
Fag and his club monopoly. All right.
We continuing forward with the news now?
I don't know. Does it seem like we should?
Well,
or should we just sit here and just, occasionally just sort of exhale and pick navel lint from ourselves?
We could do that, but I don't think that that's really why people are listening to the
You don't
the
know
broadcast.
That. We haven't really done a focus group for that kind of thing. This is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Three members of a Southern California hip-hop band were arrested Tuesday after police said they blocked traffic on Los Angeles's 101 freeway for an impromptu musical performance that created a massive traffic jam.
Now, I saw this. I didn't hear the actual... I didn't actually hear the music being performed. I just saw a picture of it, but it looked like it was... like a rock band or something. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but it looked like it was some sort of a... it looked like it was some sort of grubby, like post-darkness band. But it's entirely possible that the people in the photograph are not the performers themselves, that it was like their entourage or something. So
yeah, I have no... they're called the Imperial Stars, and they stopped their truck in the middle of traffic lanes around 10:30 a.m. yesterday, just off Sunset Boulevard on the 101, climbed atop the band's vehicle and began performing.
Wait, here's how we can tell if it's a hip-hop group or not. Is Stars spelled with three Z's at the end?
No.
No, it's not hip-hop.
And all of the musicians, at least in this story, have normal names. There's no, like...
what do you mean by normal, Don Taylor?
Well, you know, like MC Wacky Packs and Jimmy J and Snickerdoodle.
And whitest person I've ever heard in my entire life. Okay.
They were identified as Christopher Wright, Keith Yackey, and David Paul Hale.
Those are normal names, Don Taylor.
I told you. LAPD officers were called to the scene, began to direct traffic around the vehicle. About 15 minutes later, firefighters blocked off the remaining lanes, climbed up a ladder, and convinced the men to surrender. They were handcuffed and taken into custody while southbound traffic remained at a standstill. The men could face charges of obstructing traffic.
Broadcasting in various shades of alabaster, this is Legion of News.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, they describe themselves as a hardcore hip-hop band from Orange County. They have played at the Viper Room and House of Blues.
Really, that's where you find all the edgy outlaw bands, playing at the House of Blues, right between Dan Aykroyd and Bruce Willis. That's really, that's the mark of edginess and street cred, is that you're performing at the House of Blues. So forth. Later on, John Cafferty. You are listening to a Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. You can also get this program on your mobile device if you like. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. It's also available via iTunes or as a direct download here or at legionofnews.com. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes up today at 1 o'clock. And is it 1 o'clock? Then we have a Corpse Watch coming up, Penis Watch, also another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Today we settle a bet between two listeners. I can't actually say the two listeners. It's a listener and his roommate. So it may be two listeners or maybe like a one and a half listeners kind of a thing. So we are settling a bet. And I was sort of two minds as to whether to reveal more about the nature of the bet. But it's like, I know me. And if I say too much about the nature of their disagreement that we'll be settling, then I'm going to be incapable of holding myself back. So it is about, the bet is about the alleged inspiration behind a childhood nursery rhyme.
Ah.
So we're going to get to that later on today. So that'll be Pop Culture Authority. That's coming up on the Rick Emerson Show. Also, Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week will be here. He'll be counting down. Let's see if I can do this from memory. Aaron Mesh, this will all make sense when we actually do it, and it's actually pretty great, but it's got a bit of an unwieldy title. Aaron Mesh's top five songs, which when included in a film by Wes Anderson, destroy him emotionally. Him being Aaron Mesh, not Wes Anderson.
Oh, boy. Okay.
I mean, see what I mean? It's just like, it's a huge, like, it's just a big, like, it's a thing. Rube Goldberg of a title there. You are listening to Legion of News. We want to welcome a brand new business partner. That is Squires Electric. You can find out more about them at squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com. It has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business. They can make your life easier. Speaking of wiring, actually, just real quickly, it's proof that you always need guys like Joe Squires and Squires Electric who know what they're doing. So, you know, there's that thing where they, you know, in the mine where they were there for like 17 days before anybody sort of knew who they were. And they actually showed the mechanism last night by which they were getting them sort of food and water this entire time. And then they had the camera down there as well. And there was the guy who was, it was creepy. It was like full on, like the Descent stuff where the guy has like the HUD display and he's sort of wheeling around. He kept expecting there to be some sort of, you know, Abrams-esque creature kind of, you know, from around a corner. It was messed up. It was really just a freakish sort of environment those guys were in. I mean, I know that goes without saying, but it was really terrifying. And yet at the same time, It was the strangest thing where these guys are underground. You can't get to them. You can't rescue them. They're there for like 2.5 months. But at the same time, because there's a camera and they're really, you know, a relatively short distance away, it was almost like they weren't gone at all. It was the guy talked about it being the strangest experience of being able to go like, yeah, so as you can see, this is what I had for lunch today. And, you know, because the guy he's talking to is only like 100 feet away or whatever the hell it is, you know, but they just can't get out. And it's a thing that never would have been possible had it not been for all the recent advances, in fiber optics and the transmission of all this stuff. So really, wiring is, it's not so much springs as Coily would have you believe. It is, in fact, wiring that runs the entire world. Even those of you, you got like a wireless router, you got a wireless setup at home. Here's the thing. There are wires. They're somewhere else. You're not dealing with them. You know why? Because you got a guy like Joe Squires to deal with them. Squires Electric, 503-252-1609. Whether it's wiring for your home network, your Ethernet wiring, whether it's electrical wiring, whether it's putting in, as we talked about yesterday, a ceiling fan, which is a thing that seems just designed to look simple enough to put in so that it then falls on you while you're asleep and you look like you've been julienned. You don't have to deal with any of that. You call Squires Electric, and whether it is repairing, installing, removing, replacing anything having to do with the wiring in your home or business, they'll take care of it, and they'll do it right the very first time. 503-252-1609, SquiresElectric.com. This is Don Taylor.
A federal judge has ordered the U.S. military to stop enforcing the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy toward gay troops. Tyson Redhouse served for 8 years in the Red Air Force and says his homosexuality should never have been an issue.
He served in the Red Air Force?
Yes.
Really? Are we having sound bites from Ivan now? Does his opinion matter?
I was hoping we could just gloss past the fact that I just threw an extra syllable in there for no good reason.
Okay.
Being who I am and having to hide who I am sort of created this divide inside.
I bet that's true, comrade.
Redhouse served in the Air Force and is gay, and he says he regrets that the policy was even on the books.
You don't know who is gay in your unit. But it doesn't matter. As long as the job gets done and the nation is safe, that's all that really should matter.
The San Diego resident and former Marine hopes this opens the door for him to possibly return to the military.
I know me and several of my friends who were discharged under that policy would consider returning back to service. I definitely would like to do that.
You know, I think I can't remember if I read this on the air or not. My brother, who was in the Marines for some time, he sent me a long email about this whole thing, and he said that really, when you think about it, it's everybody, and it is, you know, it is conservative. It's those on the right side of the aisle who seem to be opposed to gays serving openly. He said it doesn't make any sense because if you wake up every day and you labor under this ridiculous notion that somehow, you know, the gay is, you know, wrong or immoral or whatever, if you think there's something wrong with it, you really couldn't find a better way to punish a guy than to stick him in the military. You know what I mean? I mean, really, for anybody on earth, and I don't mean that as any disrespect to the military, but you ask anybody who has gone through, you know, the basic training or boot camp, or which I have not, but just, you know, but just knowing people who have and knowing people who, even people who really love the military and love serving and they feel it's like what they were meant to do. It's like many jobs that people love where, you know, at the same time, it's just like excruciatingly difficult and unpleasant. So it seems like it's a win-win to let gays serve, because if you're fine with gays and you think they ought to be, you know, they get to serve their country with pride and with whatever, you know, head held high. If you're opposed to gays, then basically you're just sticking them, in some sort of open air jail for the next 5 years. So I don't really understand, logically speaking, why anybody would be opposed to this. It never makes any sense to me.
No, it never made any sense to me either. And the one thing they always come back to is they talk about the discomfort and distraction of it.
Cohesion of the unit,
Don. For the troops. And my father, wow, that was Freudian. My father was in the military, but I was going to say my husband. my husband was in the Army, and he said that, yeah, there were guys he served with, and a few women, too, that it was pretty well, you know, just common knowledge they were gay, and nobody gave a damn.
Right.
There were other things going on. They had a lot of other things on their mind that took priority.
As long as you'll throw yourself on a grenade so that I might live, I don't care if you're gay or straight. As long as you are willing to sacrifice your life so that I don't have to risk anything, you know, that's all that matters to me.
They were all too busy trying to survive being screamed at by sergeants and being given really unpleasant things to do all day to worry about who wanted to sleep with who.
God, yeah, my, not to get off into the whole thing, but yeah, my brother, he kept a, because they weren't really allowed to, I mean, they were allowed to write letters, but they didn't get, they were off like in the, I don't know, whatever, in the field or wherever they were training. So they didn't have access to, you know, to mail delivery sometimes. So he just kept like these journals. And he just talked about the day that it was revealed to them that, you know, because there's when they rank food, there's USDA, you know, grade A food and grade B. And I don't know if it actually goes like A, B, C, D, E, F, but I know that there is some grade at which it is unfit for human consumption. And I don't know if it is the same for all branches of service, but he said at least for the Marines when he was in basic training, when he was in boot camp, they get literally, it's like one step above we'll kill you. It's they get the same grade that prisoners get.
Yeah, the prison and military food is actually, I learned this when I was in culinary school. Prison and military canned foods are actually 1 to 2 grades above what
like they, hog
they can,
slop.
What they can sell for dog food.
Yeah.
Actual meat dog food in a can is 2 grades higher than what prisoners get and the military.
Yeah, and so he's just sitting there in a mud hole and it's like 30 degrees outside and he's just going, I've chosen so poorly. It seems like you got larger issues. And also the fact that, you know, you might be sent overseas and blown into little pieces.
That too.
Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our science news.
Here's science, which is marching right through this, which is Legion of News, which is right here, which is Cascadia.fm, which is broadcasting to you. Who's you? Here's Don Taylor.
If you had a choice, Rick Emerson, would you press a button that would give you an evenly spaced $3 per push, or would you choose the button with the big but rare payoff of $10? Even if that meant you only got about $2 per push on average.
Okay, I was told there would be no math of any kind in this job.
Okay.
Hold on. No. Hold on. Now I feel like I have to do it. Hold on. I'm on a train leaving Chicago.
Well, just imagine. You got a button.
Okay, hold on. I got a button.
Every time you push the button, it gives you $3.
$3.
There's another button that doesn't pay off every single time, but every once in a while gives you $10.
Are you asking me, logically, how often do I get to press these buttons?
As much as you want.
All right. Are you asking me logically what I should do or what, as a human, I probably would do?
I'm asking you, Rick Emerson, which would you choose?
Well, I'm not that bright, and also I have poor impulse control. So I would press the thing that occasionally gives you $10, even though that's the wrong choice.
That is the wrong choice, but
it's what people do.
Anyone who gambles gives up a sure bet of money in their pocket in hopes that they'll win. A new study has found that pigeons make the same choice. Research published today found that pigeons given the choice to peck a light that would give them 3 food pellets each time almost universally preferred a light that would give them a payout of 10 pellets 20% of the time. Averaged out, that meant pigeons were choosing to get 2 pellets per peck instead of 3. Yet they continued to choose the big payout.
It's the unpredictability of it that makes it addictive. That's the thing. Is that they've talked about that if you were to play a slot machine, I'm not saying if you played a slot machine where you always won that you would quit doing it because you'd be like, hey, free money. But it wouldn't have any thrill. I mean, you'd have the pleasure of having the money, but the actual thrill of gambling wouldn't exist. It is the fact that it is unpredictable that makes it a compulsivity-creating behavior.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's the surprising change from your expectations.
Exactly.
That keeps you doing it. They trained 8 pigeons to peck white lights for food. First, the hungry pigeons learned that if they pecked a certain light, the one on the right, say, they would see one of 2 colors, yellow or blue. 10 seconds later, the pigeon would get 3 food pellets. If the pigeon pecked the light would flash red or green. If it was red, they'd get 10 pellets 10 seconds later. If it was green, they got nothing. And it turns out after dozens of trials figuring out what the lights meant, the pigeons would just almost universally go for the big payout button.
Right.
And that it's they found with studies it's the same thing in chimps and in humans.
Oh, people, you don't even...
People like to gamble.
You don't want to know what I know about chimps, Don. You have no... remind me to tell you at some point, Don Taylor, the story of, I believe they weren't rhesus monkeys, were they macaques or something? Anyway, but there was some It was in the Stephen Levitt book that I read a while back, where they were talking about laboratory behaviors with all kinds of creatures, including monkeys, and some of them very like gambling activities. There's one, and I can't quite remember the parameters of it, but it was effectively that they had two groups of creatures, and they were given, you know, like food pellets. And the deal is, the first group was given two food pellets, and then when they would like press a button, they would either have no change, like they would get to keep both of them, or they would lose one. The second group was given one food pellet. Same thing. They press a button. Occasionally, no change. You know, they get the one. Or sometimes they get a second one, giving them a total of two. Now, the outcome in both is the same. There's a 50-50 chance that you'll end up with two pellets or one pellet. But if it was all about whether you started with one or two. In other words, the math made no sense at all. In both groups, you ran exactly the same chance of ending up with either one or two pellets. But if you started with two, they were much more reluctant to press the button at all. Like, they didn't want to screw with the button. They're like, I'm not effing with the button. And they said that this is exactly the sort of stuff that gambling concerns have known forever. It is the perception and the unpredictability of it that wins out over logic, even though we've got like massively developed brains, relatively speaking. It doesn't matter. It all pales next to the sort of visceral thrill of going, you know, heartache, and then, you know, clutching your oxygen tank ever closer to your chest as you lose your family's rent money.
There you go.
And then there was this whole thing where they learned, the monkeys, I swear to Christ, they learned to engage in prostitution using shells.
Really?
I'm not making it up.
I gotta read this book.
There was a thing where, like, they taught the monkeys... there's the last thing I'm gonna say about this. I swear to God, because I'll get off into a whole thing. Over the course of however long, it was like at Stanford or some damn place, over the course of, like, a few years, this guy had a lab full of... I always want to say macaques, because it's funny. But it was, you know, some kind of primate. And basically, he taught them the concept of money in as much as you can teach them the concept of money. That they would have, I think it was like buttons, and they could redeem the buttons for like berries or whatever. And if they would do certain things, they would get buttons, and then they could give the scientist the buttons, and the scientist would give them berries. And so he basically taught them a crude system of finance. And so I won't get all the middle ground here, because you really ought to read it yourself. But they actually stopped the experiment at one point because they realized that without having been taught this, one male monkey was going up to a female monkey and giving her buttons in exchange for sexual intercourse.
Oh, my God.
And so the monkeys had just started, like, hooking, like, without being, like, without everybody having it taught them how to do it. They were just, you know, so, sailor, what are you doing tonight? You know, and he would, like, give her a shiny thing, and then she'd, you know, weave his basket for him, and then, you know, whatever. And I swear to God, I am not making any of this up. I have it at home. I'll bring it if you want to read it at some point.
I do.
The reason they stopped the experiment, because when the monkey prostitution happened, which just sounds like insane, right, just to say out loud, that's when the university, they came in and they just, man, they stopped it like they were in Firestarter. They just shut the entire thing. It's like they padlocked it, and it's like they fumigated and just nuked the entire site from orbit, basically, because they said something very similar to, can you imagine what would happen if something were to occur with this, you know, like a security breach, and all of these monkeys escaped into the wild? They're like, we have no idea what the ramifications to the planet would be if we somehow released these creatures, and then this spread throughout the animal kingdom, and animals
taught each other prostitution.
Yeah. Well, animals just learned about a system of money.
Yeah.
He said, like, it might be good, it might be bad, it might do nothing at all, but it might wreck the entire planet. And so they actually stopped the entire experiment for fear that this system of currency would become known to the wider population of animals.
Wow.
It's completely, and it, like, it kept me up for days thinking about that. So, anyway, so there you go. Here's Don Taylor.
At Carnegie Mellon University, one robotics student estimates there are more robots than students in the department, but in a shameful display of mammalian arrogance, the precise number and type of robots is unknown. This realization led the student, Heather Knight, to begin the world's first robot census. Knight, a graduate student in robotics, Carnegie Mellon is the only school in the country to offer a degree program in robotics, began by counting the 547 robots present on the CMU campus, not including its government-run satellite lab, in which several hundred secret robots are estimated to be languishing. The quest to document robots spread from Carnegie Mellon to the Makers, a community of DIY enthusiasts organized loosely by Make Magazine. Knight put out word on the census through the Makers, set up her own online census, which, it should be noted, is far more in-depth than the U.S. government census. It asks for information such as functional category, companion, medical, entertainment, or research.
How is she defining robot for this? In other words, what is, I mean, is there some accepted scientific what is what I'm looking for, academic definition of what a robot is?
Well, here you go. Her own three minimum but not sufficient, she says, requirements to be a robot are as follows. They must act in the world, sense the world, and they need to have computation.
They must act in the world, sense the world.
And
this is what happens when hippies and scientists have kids.
But unfortunately, Technology Review magazine notes that that's a rather broad list, and it also allows smart home appliances like dishwashers to display a degree of autonomy. So,
because my iPhone is a robot, then.
Pretty much, yeah.
All right.
But it's serving to bring more attention to robotics, which Knight says is a struggle in the West due to the Terminator.
By the way, really? Does it actually say that?
Yes.
Okay. By the way, we all know that the actual definition of robot is your plastic pal who's fun to be with. Here's Don Taylor.
There are all kinds of ways to check your phone, speaking of iPhone, for updates like new email ranging from audible alarms to vibrations to little blinking lights. But a new casing for cell phones encourages you to squeeze your phone. The level of turgidity or flaccidity indicates what's happening inside. Schwatek Patel and his fellow researchers at the University of Washington in Seattle had developed Squeeze Block, a pressure-based casing that expands and contracts to mimic the tactile feel of a spring. The casing has tiny motors built inside, which can detect pressure and provide feedback at different levels. Lab tests showed that users can typically distinguish four levels of firmness, which gives us at least as many options as an indicator light.
I don't understand. What would be the point of this?
I think basically you would squeeze your phone, and by squeezing it, you would see how firm it feels.
Right.
And that would indicate how much battery life you have left, if you've missed any messages or phone calls.
Have we
reached if you have messages waiting, it would say feel firmer, as if it was more full of phone messages.
Have we reached the point where tilting one's head to look down slightly has become just too much work for us? I don't know. I have to look, and it's all the way down there.
But they're also saying it could be an interesting step forward, because eventually that could also be something that could be applied to, say, gameplay on your on your phone, or perhaps even with a console, that how hard you squeeze something would indicate certain.
Well, it seems like they could probably do that now. If they've got whatever the hell it's called, Kinect or whatever that thing that Microsoft is coming out with, where it's like you just sort of mime something in front of the computer, you could tell. Like if there was, they ought to bring back like the Power Glove, but in a less lame and nerdoid fashion, where but it ought to be just like a real sheer glove that you could put on each hand, and it would have sensors in it, and you could actually just it would sense the opening and closing of your hand. That's what they really ought to do.
I'm not sure they even really need to do that anymore, though, because with motion detection stuff now, it's become so much more sophisticated that, honestly, just moving right and left and stuff with games, there's a lot of motion detection software that will actually read how you're using your hand.
I just like to bring back the Power Glove reference whenever I can. That was really the only goal there. That and that shoulder bazooka thing that they sold, it worked with nothing. There was like one game and then it never worked with anything else. Also, I found a definition of robot here. This is from Merriam-Webster. A mechanical or virtual artificial agent. That's number one. Number two, an electromechanical system which, by its appearance or movements, conveys a sense that it has intent or agency of its own. So where something seems to be thinking for itself, whether or not it actually is. So that would be like your computer, your car, probably. Your iPhone, sure. So any of that stuff. By the way, this thing with the turgid phone or whatever, that's a stupid idea, guys. I'm just going to speak for all of Western civilization here. You've wasted your venture capital. So
I have to admit, though, there's this part of me that kind of likes it. The idea that I would squeeze my phone and it feels kind of flabby. So I would go, ooh, I'm running out of battery life.
Nothing happening in there.
I have to fill it back up and then it'll be firm again.
I mean, I guess maybe it could be some sort of a thing where, like, if you just, depending on how. It sounds so dumb. This conversation just makes me feel like it makes me feel like I'm being punked somehow. Depending on how firm the phone is, like that's how full your inbox is. The goddamn phone is right there. Just look at it. It's right. It's a foot away from you. All right. Just like we were talking about that documentary they were going to be releasing about the retrospective on Barack Obama. He just got into office like a day ago.
somehow Justin Bieber wrote an autobiography. We have a very short attention span.
Jesus. I'm so nostalgic for the very, very recent past. Here's Don Taylor.
That's all the science.
All right, thank God. All right, there you go. That's science on the march right here at Legion of News. Legion of News. Speaking of, we were talking about Joe Squires and wiring. Let's talk about a different kind of wiring. That's God's own wiring, which he placed inside your mushy, mushy brain. Your brain really is, I don't know, I should make some sort of obligatory correlation with the robots or something here. But the thing about your brain is that it actually, I don't know if it was off the air or on the air, we talked about there's this study where they, in fact, it was in the same book, where they found that people who had that encephalitis or whatever it is, where you get excess fluid in the head, and over the course of their lives, their brain actually became much smaller because there simply wasn't enough room for it. But it was sort of like, it was like your neighborhood slowly flooding because the brain filled with fluid, and so the brain flattened out, the inside of the skull filled with fluid, brain flattened out against the top of the skull, became very thin. But just as like if your house was slowly getting underwater and you had time to move everything to the roof, like the brain just moved all its facilities up to the very top. It's like, ah, it's all going to be flooded down there. We got to put everything up here in the surface attic.
I don't want to destroy your analogy, but I did want to share with you. I thought of that just the other day. Day before yesterday, there was a thing on PBS. It was one or Discovery. I can't remember which. But there was a kid, and he was having all of these seizures, and there were some problems with his brain. And the only solution that they really came up with, the neurosurgeon came up with, they were just going to cut about like a third of his brain out.
Right.
And just remove it. And the thing is, they were saying it would take a while for him to regain certain functions, but the brain is capable of just sort of
fixing itself,
yeah. And he would be fine.
Well, you know what it is? See, now we're becoming like a parody of ourselves here. It's like in Terminator 2. But it, you know, it's when it does when whatever the T-1000 puts the steel thing, rod through the T-800, and then they show the internal like schematic, whatever. It's like rerouting around damage. I mean, that's what your brain does, and it'll just figure out like, okay, hey, everybody on this side is gonna have to row harder. Okay, that's just look. I don't make the rules. I just let heave, and then you just start to learn in like a different section of your brain. So your brain really is. Your brain really is fantastic, and I mean this with all the sincerity. Like, don't be some jagoff who's just sitting at home huffing paint thinner all day. That's just disrespectful to your brain cells. I mean, really, come on.
This PSA brought to you by.
I'm just saying, you want to treat your brain well, and you want to keep it in shape. You don't want to just be, you want to constantly, as Henry Rollins says, you want more muscle, you got to pick up a bigger weight. So you want your brain to keep working, you got to keep feeding it new stuff to learn. So here's what you do: you go to PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. And Clara Grebel is the woman who runs Castalia Language Center. You can find out more about them again at PortlandSpanish.com. Their Spanish language program for adults. Class sizes of no more than 8 people. It means you and no more than 7 other people. You get near individualized attention. And here's a way that I guess, I mean, maybe technically this is learning, but it's not really learning in any substantive way. Where you're just sitting and you're just memorizing crap. You're just looking at a chart and you're just committing a bunch of stuff to memory and you don't really know what it means or how to use it or like how to actually, how to take linguistic flights of fancy with it. You just memorize some crap in a page and you can regurgitate it to pass a test. That's the wrong way to learn language, and that's not what they do at Castalia Language Center. They actually teach you to speak a language by speaking the language. So you can actually, in the strictest sense of the word, you can learn it conversationally. Find out more about it at PortlandSpanish.com. They're a proud sponsor of Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. That is PortlandSpanish.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Investigators in North Carolina are searching for a missing 10-year-old girl in what is now being called a homicide investigation. Zara Baker's stepmother has been arrested on obstruction of justice. Charles Bost lived next door and says the girl never came up in his conversations with her family.
What is the name of this cousin?
Baker.
I didn't even know that she existed. I mean, I've never seen her.
Okay.
I didn't even know that she existed. I mean, I've never seen her.
That's one of those days where you go back to the news desk, at the paper or whatever, and you just put your Marantz tape recorder down and you go, this is all I got. I'm going to go drink. Goodbye.
Yeah, I had those days.
Entire day just pounding the pavement in the Appalachians and you get this guy.
I didn't even know that she existed.
That's probably the smartest guy they could find, too. That is the best of all the sound bites that reporter gathered that day. All right.
2 weeks ago, Tiffany Hartley, this is a different story, by the way. 2 weeks ago, Tiffany Hartley says that she was jet skiing on the Mexican side of Falcon Lake when she and her husband were approached by 3 boats full of cartel pirates who opened fire, fatally shooting David before zipping off. If that wasn't surreal enough, police in the Mexican state of Tamaulipas received a gift on Tuesday. the severed head of Commander Rolando Armando Flores Villegas, the main investigator on the case. His head was delivered to the Army garrison this morning in a suitcase after he failed to report home last night, according to a Texas sheriff. Mexican officials initially denied that Flores had been killed. Then, after acknowledging
after
the death...
his head showed up in the mail. They were forced to augment that statement ever so slightly.
Then they denied allegations that the decapitation had anything to do with David Hartley's disappearance.
This is, a coincidence.
The commander was also involved in other investigations, the Tamaulipas spokesman said. Reports that two brothers and alleged Zeta cartel members have been named as suspects in the shooting were also denied by police. Tiffany Hartley has asked investigators to recover her husband's body, and last weekend, U.S. Border Patrol, Coast Guard, and Parks and Wildlife officials scoured the American side of Falcon Lake to no avail.
Look, I know it's very, we're not without problems in this fading republic, and I know that sometimes, it can seem as though our police departments are rife with corruption and graft and whatever. But, I mean, then you look around the world and you realize that that really isn't an isolated, that's not an isolated phenomenon. We don't have heads showing up in the mail all the time, followed by a press conference where the guy goes, so there's a head, so what? It could be nothing, a paper cut.
Who says it has to do with this case? He had other cases.
Could be an accident.
Maybe he was addressing a letter and the edge of the envelope was really, really sharp. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Nevada Senate contender Sharon Engel raised an astonishing $14 million between July and September, her campaign announced on Wednesday, an amount that dwarfs the intake of all other GOP challengers this election year.
Is that the chick in, I want to say South Carolina, but that's wrong.
Nevada.
Nevada.
Is described by multiple news sources as, quote, eye-popping. Sharon Engel produced one of the most successful single quarters of fundraising in the nation's history for a U.S. Senate campaign.
She is cute. I'll give her that.
Engel's spokesman, Jared Agin, stated, this is a testament to the hatred of Harry Reid, the nation's disapproval of President Obama, and the unprecedented grassroots support for Sharon Engel.
By the way, if anybody wants to know why, you know, here's the thing about Republicans, is that, I don't know, like, I mean, I like Republicans in the same way that I like, you know, Vogons I don't know. Help me out. That guy in Mexico that killed his enemies and then made them into a stew.
The stewmaker.
Yeah, the stewmaker. That guy.
He didn't kill them. He disposed of the bodies for the guys who killed them.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, sure, they're evil, you know, and horrible, you know, in almost every way. But, you know, but with a certain sort of negative charisma, though. I mean, there is a certain swashbuckling kind of snidely whiplash appeal, you know, to statements like that, where they raise more money than anybody ever has. And rather than saying, like, this is a testament to change and to a better future and it's morning in America and this is the power of a united nation to overcome our common obstacles. No, the guy actually gets behind a camera and he goes, this is a testament to the power of hate. And then he just grabs a bag of money and runs off stage. You know, I mean, you know, eat snack, he's Mars, and then he runs away. And then, you know, with, I mean, who says that? Who raises a lot of money and then gets on television and says, this, by the way, is what we can do with the power of hate? The answer is Republicans.
Tea Party people, yeah. That's who.
So they're kind of awesome in that way. I mean, here's the thing about Republicans is you always know what you're getting. That's the thing. There's never any illusion about what you are going to receive if you cast your ballot on that side. Right or wrong, it's a known quantity. That is a label of ingredients that is totally accurate. What does this contain? Hate and spiders. And you go, oh, okay then. And you can make an informed decision. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Fantastic. By the way, this entertainment news brought to you by Mr. Michael Beatty. He's the proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. I was going to tie this into the whole the stew maker and the cleaner and the whatever. I will say this. The Cleaning Solution, of course, Michael Beatty can be reached at 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. And I'm actually going to put off having him come to my home for a couple of weeks. I'm going to wait. I'm going to try to figure out exactly like the middle ground to where, like, it's like before Laura gets back. But so it doesn't look like the place was just clean. Like, in other words, he's going to get no credit in my home. Like, here,
yeah,
I'll acknowledge it.
You don't want her to walk in and there's, like, still the vacuum cleaner tracks in the carpet.
Totally. And I'm like, baby, you can't step on this for, like, 6 to 8 hours. So just walk gingerly around the corners. Here, I've got a sheet of plastic for you.
Everything smells of Febreze and the dogs are, like, wrapped in saran wrap and stuffed in a closet so they don't shed on anything.
So I'm going to try to find exactly the right time to have him come take care of this because... whether it's your entryway, your hardwood flooring, the marble tile, anything your feet touch, anything your pet might damage, which in my house is like everything, every exposed surface, and several that weren't exposed until I left the house for a protracted period of time. You write down that number. You can find out more about it at 971-533-3211. But cleaning solution reminds me of The Cleaner, which reminds me of Stephen King, which reminds me of Sons of Anarchy, which I did not watch last night. Because I got so busy doing some other things, so I suck. So let's just get that out of the way right now. I am the worst human who's ever lived. Here's Don Taylor.
Friends actor David Schwimmer, 43, married 25-year-old photographer Zoe Buckman back in June, according to Entertainment Weekly. Schwimmer met Buckman in London back in 2007 when he was directing the comedy Run, Fat Boy, Run. His latest directing effort, Trust, stars Clive Owen and Catherine Keener. So apparently the world just found out that he got married in June because he had a movie that's coming out at the Toronto Film Festival.
I guess. I mean, to his credit, he didn't try to make a huge deal of it then because that would have been dumb. Because who really cares if David, Schwimmer gets married? Yeah. The answer is no one. So, I mean, points to him.
David Arquette opened up about his marriage to Courtney Cox on Tuesday's Howard Stern radio show, and he claimed that they split up after shooting started on the latest Scream film in Michigan. After our 11th anniversary, she gave me a motorcycle and said, "I don't want to be your mother anymore," said the actor. "I was like, all right, I get it. We go to do Scream 4, and I'm feeling distance, obviously, from my wife. We've not had sex in quite a while. At that time, like a month or so. Since then, it's been like 4 months. We're not having sex. After we got back from shooting Scream 4, we decided to get a trial separation." Arquette said he had sex with a waitress named Jasmine Waltz since the separation.
Well done. Aim high.
Added that he's going to therapy and that he and Cox are still tight.
First, I guess you'd have sex with a waitress named Jasmine.
Actor Matt Damon and his wife, Luciana Barossa, are expecting a baby girl next month. Barossa has two daughters from her relationship with Damon, and she has an 11-year-old daughter named Alexis from a past relationship.
I'm sorry, I'm still back on the Arquette thing, so we'll give a bit of this. My brain is trying to play catch up here, but
I guess when you go on Howard Stern and you're David Arquette, you just feel like sharing with him, your closest personal secrets.
That guy just seems like a douche. I mean, I'm not saying he's a bad guy. Maybe douche is the wrong way to put
it.
He irritates me.
A doof. He seems like a doof.
That's the thing. Not a douche. Douche is like one of those Jersey Shore guys or whatever.
Yeah.
But a doof is the way to put it. He just seems like kind of a mouth. You know what he seems like? Okay, I've got it. David Arquette is like if Jason Stackhouse were a real person from True Blood. That's what he seems like to me. He's just kind of a tool user, kind of a mouth breather, kind of a gum chewer.
Well, all of the Arquettes grew up in this kind of weird, hippie, artsy actor-like family sort of thing. And it's to their credit that most of them actually have honest-to-God careers at all, since they all seem more than a little bit crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give him points for not being Matthew Lillard, but that's about it, really. So.
Andy Richter will return as Conan O'Brien's sidekick for O'Brien's new TBS show, Conan, which premieres on TBS. "This decision was made without my authority," said O'Brien in a statement. "I will get to the bottom of this."
Fantastic.
Richter added that he is excited at the idea of, quote, "getting out of the house again."
Well done. Excellent. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll have more on these and other stories of interest. That'll be the new name of our show, just Stories of Interest. Stories of vague to middling interest to a small handful of people. Corpse Watch coming up today. Penis Watch coming up today. Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week will have the top five songs which, when used in a film made by Wes Anderson, reduce he, Aaron Mesh, to a pile of emotional wreckage. It's something very similar to that. It's a great top five, though. It really is. Not that I have my doubts. He seems like a guy who loves music, but you just never know. It's really, really, for his first top five, it's like he didn't even need the training wheels, Don. It's like he was just pedaling away down the street on his Huffy, right out of the gate.
Doing a top five for you is there's a lot of pressure there because there's a whole lot of history there. Because I remember when you asked me to do one, and when I was a guest on your show, and I just stressed and stressed and stressed over it. And finally, because I felt like I really needed to do something impressive.
Well, because the audience will nail you too if you, not even a mistake. I have, by the way, made factual mistakes in the top five. Not very often, but occasionally I'll just have a brain lock, and
also, as a guest too, you just don't want to seem lame.
Well, because it says who you are as a person. It's like these, especially if it's the first top five list you've ever done. Because we do top five, top five drum intros to a song, or top five happiest songs in my collection, or top five, you know, songs that whatever. But it's in your assessment, and so it is. You know, if it's the first one you've ever done, it is the first thing we are ever seeing of your music taste and collection, which is the thing that we use to judge people like relentlessly.
Do you remember what mine was?
Your very first top five? I don't think I do actually.
It was the top five songs that Quentin Tarantino ruined for everyone.
Oh yeah, I do remember that. And then you did the top five teenage sulking songs, which I think you've actually, you sort of did a variation on that recently, but you did that one a couple of years ago,
yeah.
Right? That was great. I remember really liking that list a lot. So, no, it's difficult. And the audience, they're a cruel master. They will really punish you if they feel you've made some sort of mistake on something. So that's coming up later on. Also, today's Pop Culture Authority. So today we answer the magical question. I'll just say it. We will answer the magical question, what is Ring Around the Rosie really about?
Okay.
There you go.
I know what I've heard it's about, but it's my understanding that might not necessarily be true.
Well, so. It's normally the sort of thing that I wouldn't do, but it is. Somebody asked us to settle a bet between his roommate and he about the origin and meaning of that. So we'll get to that later on. That's Pop Culture Authority coming up today on The Rick Emerson Show at rickemerson.com. This is Don Taylor.
Carl Palladino is trying very hard not to come across as a hate monger. On Tuesday, New York's Republican gubernatorial candidate issued an official apology for his comments on gays brainwashing children and gyrating in Speedos at gay pride parades. But he didn't repudiate the substance of his remarks. He just said that he, quote, should have chosen better words.
Uh-huh.
In his 400-word statement, Palladino said he's a live-and-let-live person whose views on gay marriage track with President Obama's. If elected as your governor, I will stand and fight for all gay New Yorkers' rights, he said. I ask you for forgiveness on my poorly chosen words.
Let's listen to those poorly chosen words, some of them anyway. Here's some.
Young children should not be exposed to that at a young age. They don't understand. It's a very difficult thing. And exposing them to homosexuality, especially at a gay pride parade.
What happens there?
I don't know if you've ever been to one, but they wear these little Speedos and they grind against each other, and it's just a terrible thing.
Why would you bring your children?
The best thing is, as you pointed out, you can just hear Matt Lauer's brain. It's like when you wiggle your mouse on the computer after you've been asleep and hear it go, and it starts to power up. Because it's like, why would you ever say that? And there is, now, I am not suggesting that Mr. Palladino is the gay. I do not believe that everybody who's anti-gay is secretly gay. I think most people who are anti-gay are just deeply dumb. They're not even secretly dumb. They might be secretly gay. They're openly stupid. But there is something in the way he phrases it where he says, so these gay pride parades, Matt Lauer, I don't know if you've ever been to one, but let me tell you what happens there. It's like he's describing like a really happened in Elks Lodge or something that, yeah. Like, you know, I don't know if you've been there, but let me tell you, I have, and the pretzels to die for. It's all very strange.
Well, and also by saying that, you know, his words were poorly chosen. I mean, I've had myself a little bit of therapy. I know that you yourself have had a little bit of therapy. And one of the things I learned in therapy is how you apologize. And there are certain things that are not actual apologies.
Yes.
Like when you say, well, I'm sorry that what I said upset you.
Sorry if you took it that way, oversensitive.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. You know, I'm sorry that my words, you know, were misinterpreted.
I'm sorry.
That's not apologizing for what you said.
The new way to do this, I've learned this now by watching Oprah, the way that you now apologize while still managing to be like a jackass about it is to use the phrase, this is one of those things that needs to be stricken from like every lexicon everywhere. If I hear another person say something akin to, well, I told my truth, there is no your truth.
Yeah.
For the love of Christ, it's like saying your numbers. There's only one set. There's just, you know. So that's the other thing. You'll go, well, you know, I told my truth, but I understand that that's, you know, everybody has their own view on things. And, of course, the implication is that, like, I am still right and you are still wrong, but I am making a show of apology, just like these guys doing when he's talking about Matt Lauer. I haven't seen the video of this. I'd like to see Lauer's expression when the guys are talking about grinding in a little Speedo. Not a large, roomy Speedo, but a tiny one. Minuscule. All right, well, there you go. With that Speedo reference, I think we're done here. By the way, and I got through the whole robotics thing without, you know, in the magazine The Maker without saying bless the maker. So let's all hear it for me. This has been another exciting episode of Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. The Rick Emerson Show is next. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Grant is brought to you by our good friends at New Millennium Landscaping and Maintenance. Find out more about that at rickemerson.com, which is where you can subscribe for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day. Don Taylor is at the news desk. Advanced science and technology and magic and things brought to you by and stuff brought to you by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show is next. We will see you again tomorrow at noon for another exciting installment of Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for listening and have a pleasant day.